Canto 1, chapter 8, text number, I think we did 2 last time. Yeah. We did 32, 34, yeah? 32 and 33, yeah? Huh? So it's 34. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Paravatarana nayane. Bhuvo nava ivo dadha siddhantya bhuri bharena jatho hyatma bhuvartita bharavatarnayane bhuvo nava ivo dadha siddhantya bhuri bharena jatho hyatma bhuvartita bharavataran Nayane bhuvo nava ivo dhadhau siddhantya bhuri bharena jato yatma bhuvartita. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki jai. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. Please be paid. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea,
is much aggrieved,
and that Brahma, who is your son,
prayed for you,
and so you have appeared
to diminish the trouble.
Brahma, or the first living being, born just after the creation, is the direct son of Narayan. Narayan is Gavadhaya Sai Vishnu, first of all entered the material universe. Without spiritual contact, matter cannot create. This principle was followed from the very beginning of the creation. The Supreme Spirit entered the universe, and the first living being, Brahma, was born on a lotus flower, grown out of the transcendental abdomen of Vishnu. Vishnu is therefore known as Padmanabha. Brahma is known as Atmabhu because he was begotten directly from the Father without any contact of Mother Lakshmiji. Lakshmiji was present near Narayan, engaged in the service of the Lord, and still without contact with Lakshmiji, Narayan begot Brahma. That is the omnipotency of the Lord. One who foolishly considered Narayan like other living beings should take lessons from this. Narayan is not an ordinary living being. He is the personality of Godhead himself. And he has all the potencies of all the senses in all parts of his transcendental body. I'll repeat that. And he has all the potencies of all the senses in all parts of his transcendental body. A naughty living being begets a child by sexual intercourse, and he has no other means to beget a child other than the one designed for him. But Narayan, being only potent, is not bound by any condition of energy. He is complete and independent to do anything and everything by his various potencies, very easily and perfectly. Brahma is therefore directly the son of the Father, and was not put into the womb of a mother. Therefore he is known as Atmabhu. This Brahma is in charge of further creations in the universe. Secondarily reflected by the potency of the omnipotent. Within the halo of the universe, Jagannath Swami, the Igor Siddhi. This Brahma is in charge of further creations in the universe, secondarily reflected by the potency of the Omnipotent. Within the halo of the universe, there is a transcendental planet known as Swetadvip, which is the abode of Chudayakshaya Vishnu, the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Lord. Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution. And if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Chudayakshaya Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Chudayakta ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudev and Devaki. So some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. Mahavishnubhudaya, Krishna Prasaya, Vidare, Simhati Bhakti Granta, Swami Iti Namane, Namaste, Sarasati Devi, Gauravani, Chanini, Nir Vishesha Sandavari, Pasyatya Sadhani, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nitananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Sarasi Gaur Bhakta Vinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here Queen Kunti is praying to the event her son. Who is Kunti praying to here? Huh? Lord Krishna, directly. Not her son. So she's given different reasons why, or different interpretations of why people think that the Lord appears. Yesterday or the other day we heard some say he's born for the glorification of pious kings, or to please King Yadu, or for the appearance of his devotees. Others say that Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, therefore you have come to fulfill their desire. At the same time you diminish the burden on the earth. Another say, now you've come because Lord Brahma prayed. This is today's one. Because Lord Brahma prayed, who is your son? And prayed for you, so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. So this Swetadvip, which is in the material world, is actually a spiritual place. It is within the bubble of the Mahatattva. And the devas, when there's a problem here for the management of the universe, then the devas, together they go with Lord Brahma and they go to the shore of this ocean, an ocean of milk. And there they pray to the Lord. They generally offer the Purusha Shukta prayers, which we chant in for the deity worship. And then the Lord appears sometimes. Generally they don't see the Lord. Generally it comes within the heart of Lord Brahma. Sometimes it's a voice. Sometimes they see him. Generally they don't. Generally it's just he gets the answer comes to Lord Brahma, then he will tell what happened, what the program is. And then the Lord comes and helps them, and they're all satisfied. They get their position back, and they say, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. And they all go back about their respective things. So they're the administrators. So they're not considered pure devotees, as the Bhagavatam is extolling. Because you see many times the devas, they understand the position of the Lord. They understand that because they always go to him when there's a problem, and he comes and helps them. But when he goes, So they're considered little mixed. Sometimes it's said like they're like Kama Mishra Bhaktas. But maybe you shouldn't preach like this too much openly. Because some people may become offended. But from the viewpoint of the pure devotees, then we can see what their activities are. They have some material, I want to, they're devotees of Krishna, no doubt, they're devotees of the Lord, but they're praying, I want to serve the Lord like this. Whereas, our bhakti, what do we want? What kind of bhakti do we want? Yes? Unlife and unmotivated. Without motivation. That's very rare. But this is what Bhagavatam is offering. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering. And this is what actually pleases Krishna best. Unmotivated devotional service. But the motivation is there, but it's not a self-motivation. We see with the devas, they want to serve Krishna, but I want to serve him like this. There's some condition there. It's not unmotivated, it's not unconditional service. I want to serve like this. They have the ability and they have the qualification and they get that service. So therefore they're called devatas. And that means they're devotees of the Lord. But even they become bewildered. Even such exalted personalities. We're reading many times how to become, even Lord Brahma himself becomes bewildered on several occasions. Although Madhavas won't accept this. The Brahma Mahalila, when Krishna tricks Brahma when he steals the cowherd boys, they don't like this. Or when Brahma chases his daughter in the form of a stag, takes the form of a deer, they don't accept this because he's our child, after all. But we can see by these instances that even those great personalities, they are subject to the illusory energy. Because as long as there's some self desire, you have some motivation, which is different from actually the Lord's interest, then that means you're affected by the qualities of nature, the three gunas, or at least one of them. Yeah, there's some conditioning there. There must be there. See, as long as you're in contact with the modes of nature, then you're going to identify yourself as part of this material world, which in essence is actually illusion. That is called Maya. That connection with the material world is called Maya, because the connection is actually illusory, because the spirit doesn't touch matter. The soul, like oil and water, they don't mix. They'll always be separate. You can't merge them. So like that, the idea that we are part of this material creation is called Maya. And that is all, and the whole, when you're in the middle of this gigantic bubble halo, it is described here, it's 1/10,000th apart the tip of the head, surely you're going to be overcome and influenced by this insurmountable energy, as Krishna says, insurmountable. Devi Shigunamai, very difficult. It's all, everywhere you look, all around you, every atom. Surrounded, completely bombarded every moment by this illusory energy. Body's always demanding to take me here, fill me up, empty me, clean me, rest me. Just the body. Then, from that, then the extensions go out. Then we become attached to this body, the idea of I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. Become attached to that idea, become attached to the sensate, the experience that we get when our senses contact the material objects. Although we're nothing to do with the senses, still because that illusion is there, we are that, and we've heard about that, and we're actually experiencing something, and we think, according to your conditioning, you think this is nice. So according to that, then you'll make a program, you become attached to something, or someone, and as a result of that, there's more objects to become attached to. So it goes on. But the actual position, Jivasri point, Krishna Nitya Das. That is the actual position. of the living entity, that we were the eternal servants of God. And we can't be that here. We can't be an eternal servant of God here. Not a conditioned soul. Arjuna may be an eternal servant of God in the material world, but but nothing is eternal in the material world. I mean, the energy is eternal, but sometimes it's manifest, sometimes unmanifest. It's not constant. It's constantly changing. So we're eternal. The energy is also eternal. Sometimes disappears. So it's not really satisfactory. He described how Lord Vishnu, he's completely changed. Although he's within this material universe, he's untouched. Yeah? It's like the lotus leaf. It's untouched by the water. Although it grows, it lives on the water, it grows, it takes its life, sustenance from the water, but it doesn't touch the water. It's always above the water. So Lord Vishnu, Krishna, when he appears, he has the same thing. He doesn't actually touch it. And of course, he's not dependent on it, like the lotus flower. It's a material example. The material energy is actually dependent on him, and it works under his direction. So, for him, nothing is impossible. So it says here how the Lord's senses are actually interchangeable. So when he wants to, when he wants to bring in creation, he doesn't need the wife. He doesn't need the service of Lakshmi to do that. he just grows from his navel. The lotus grows by his desire. Then the lotus springs from his navel, and Lord Brahma appears on that navel. So he's called unborn sometimes, or the he's born from the lotus. But in any case, he's born directly from the Lord. So in one sense, he's not different from the Lord. So he's called Guna Avatar anyway. So he's for to further the creation. Then Lord Brahma, yes, this is hands-on stuff. Then Brahma does actually touch the material energy. And Lord Shiva, although he's an incarnation, he's a Guna Avatar. So therefore he has to deal with the energy. He actually touches the energy. And also we see that he becomes illusioned by it. So this is just for our just to understand how powerful the energy is. That even the first created person, who's the most intelligent person in the universe, Lord Brahma, he can also become bewildered by the Lord's energy. And also Lord Indra is a very exalted post. Takes the position of the king of all of the devas. Even he becomes bewildered. So what to speak of us? And even you see that he becomes bewildered, then Lord Krishna will enlighten him to his actual position. Again, he becomes bewildered. Into a king, he becomes bewildered. When Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, he didn't want to hurt Indra's pride too much. So he showed his opulence to Lord Indra. Actually, it says by some chariots that actually Indra just wanted to see the Lord's pastime. But he actually knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he thought he'd do something just to see some wonderful pastime of the Lord, which he did. But otherwise, we can accept that the Lord is—he actually becomes illusion. The Indra actually becomes illusion by this energy, although he performs, although he's such a powerful person. And then he gets that full realization, and he comes very sorry, and he touches his head on Krishna's feet, and he gives him Abhishek with his Aravata, the elephant, and Saravi. And he brings a Saravi cow. Because he knows the Lord is very fond of cows, so he brings a cow so Krishna may not be so angry with him. And they offer the Lord Abhishek, he offers wonderful prayers. And then he goes away again, satisfied. So he saw the Lord, how he exhibited the opulence by simply on his little finger. Although he was only 7 years old, he lifted a huge mountain for 7 days. And because of Yogamaya, nobody could really understand what was going on, because all the residents immediately, they made it run to Krishna when there was a problem. And so he said, "Don't worry, come under." And there was a very gorgeous arrangement. It wasn't mud under that hill. By the Yogamaya's presence, it wasn't just mud and worms. There was gorgeous places, sitting places. It was like a heavenly atmosphere underneath. They were living very nicely. Don't think they were just shivering in the cold and waiting for the storms or something. No, there was all gorgeous arrangements for living. Accommodations were there. Plenty of nice food available. And Krishna was standing there just giving them his constant darshan for 7 days, smiling at them. Standing there, and sometimes they think, "How is Krishna doing that?" Then they would get a little nervous, and the Nanda Baba would push his stick up, and the other gopas also, they have to help. Yeah. This person is very extraordinary. He must be blessed by Lord Vishnu. But Krishna's standing there, and he's glancing over his associates, and he glances over the gopis, and he glances at the beautiful faces, and his glance goes down a little bit further, and his hand starts to shake, thinking of his amorous pastimes with them, and his hand starts shaking. Everyone gets nervous, and they're pushing the thing up like that. Then everyone gets fearful, and Balaram understands Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's nothing to fear. Why these people are fearful? They're smiling. Why are they frightened? So Krishna sees Balaram smiling, then he thought, "He's understood my mind," and Krishna becomes embarrassed. So like that, so he doesn't need to use anything else. He can simply, by his desire, he's making these huge planets float in this earth, in this universe. We see the sun, the moon, all these planets. How are they floating there? How are they doing that? They say by gravity, what we call Ananta. He's in charge of the gravity. But there's someone in charge of gravity. And that person gets his potency from Krishna. Then it was much impossible for him. And if he's floating these huge planets, why can't he lift it with him? In London, there was a mentor society. You had to have a very high IQ to become a member of this society. I think it's called the Mentor Society. You have to have a super high IQ. So they were supposed to be very intelligent people. So they come and offer Prabhupada a trick question. They asked him, "Can God create a mountain that is so big that he can't lift it?" See the trick? If he creates a mountain, if he says yes, then he can't lift it, then he can't be God. Then, if he can't do it, then he's not God. So it's a loaded question. So Prabhupada said, "Yes." They said, "Then he can't be God." Then he can't create a mountain. Can you create a bigger one? There's logicians going like that, and then finally Krishna, you put the hill down on their heads and squash them all. But they don't get anywhere like that. They're going to try and feed it. When they were installing Radha Nandanishwara, it was a last minute thing as usual. TV cameras were there, and while they were doing the Abhishek or putting the deity in, there was two big wooden columns and a wooden beam on top. They weren't fixed. So then somebody knocked the column, it started to fall. And Prabhupada was, no one saw it, but Prabhupada saw it, and he held it up. It was a big, heavy beam. Prabhupada held it up. And the TV cameraman was shooting. They thought this was part of the ritual. They didn't know what was going on. But the devotee said, you know, it was really heavy. So Prabhupada didn't just held it there until they managed to put the thing back. So you can do that by the Lord's mercy. The devotee can also do wonderful feats. So here, because the Lord's senses are interchangeable, it says that the Lord can eat with his eyes, he can hear with his hands. Senses are completely interchangeable. Also in the Madhuri Kadambini, if you read that, a little short work by Vishwanath Chakrabarti, it's like the stages from Shraddha to Prem. You've heard those episodes sometimes. So that a stage when a devotee attains to the very highest stages in devotional service, Bhavata and Prem, then when he actually sees the Lord face to face, he says, by seeing the Lord's beauty and his all those qualities, all the things you've actually heard about, now you're seeing him face to face, then the devotee swoons in ecstasy. And he reposes himself. He said, then he smells the fragrance of Krishna, and then he's overpowered again and becomes unconscious by that beautiful aroma. Then he hears the sound of Krishna, and Krishna's talking, very melodious, such a wonderful sound, the way he speaks. And he's completely overcome by ecstasy. So it goes through all the senses like this, that every sense is completely over, you become completely overwhelmed. But then the senses take on the quality of the other senses. So the eyes can the ears can also see, and the nose can take on also the quality of sight. So then you get that double fold, triple fold, many fold. You get all the ecstasies increasing all the time because the senses are interchangeable. So all of the senses, you can get that. How many times is that? Six, five times, five times, five times. It's a lot. The ecstasies multiply so much because all the senses are interchangeable, so you can all experience it. Okay. So even the devotee gets that opportunity in perfection. So that is why it says Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam, the bliss is ever increasing in the spiritual world. Every step is a dance and every word is a song. Everything goes on there very nicely by the arrangement of Krishna's internal energy, complete enjoyment, but the enjoyment is ever increasing. It's always, and they're always thinking with the independence, they're thinking of new ways to enjoy, new ways we can bring Krishna happiness. And that's their freedom there, they can do that. So Krishna's controlled by his. Then Krishna becomes also bewildered by his own potency, mukta. That he can be bewildered by his own potency. So that then there can be nice surprises and things like that. So this is unimaginable. Well, you can. That's all you can do is just imagine, but you can't actually experience what it's like on the species completely beyond our limited scope of dimensions. So therefore, many people say it's all just mythology or just faith. They say the Bhagavatam or Vedas are just written by some group of very intelligent brahmanas, and they sat down and they wrote these things. So if you go to the library, you may find under mythology these things are fine. But actually, if someone was going to write such a thing, there's no need to go so far. There's no need to write such esoteric things. If you wanted to convince, if we decided to make a book to bluff somebody, you wouldn't go so far. You wouldn't go into the unbelievable. It's not necessary. Already the philosophy is so wonderful, so fantastic. You know, it's far above any other philosophy existing, especially the modern day ones. It goes far beyond that. But then it goes into the supernatural, unreal, more or less, as according to this world. So you wouldn't do that. Why would you? Already you can take them further than they can imagine. And now you want to take them, and now you want to get into different areas where it's completely unimaginable. It's not necessary to write something like that. How the Lord has interchangeable senses and things like that, and how he behaves by different energies. how he can be, how can be illusioned by his own energy. So why would they write these things if that was the case, if they actually wanted to, you know, get some people, get everyone to act morally? So they write in these descriptions that this is what you're supposed to do, and they write in the descriptions about the hellish region so that people will be actually moral. Then the world will be a nice place. Right? Otherwise, just to get some fame as a new philosopher. But in this case, it's just not necessary to go so far. It's just too esoteric. It's just, no one's going to believe it. No normal person's going to believe it. But that's why, actually, part of it is there, because bhakti is only available to the devotees. Devotee means someone who has faith in the Lord. Otherwise, how can you? Otherwise, then there's no admission. So this stops the, non-believers, the agnostics and the like that. They can't enter into the realms of bhakti, devotional service. This is one protection for them. That it, because it depends on faith. You can't penetrate with logic. How far can your logic go? You can only, you can't even go to the end of the universe by your own logic. So how do you expect to go understand what's happening beyond that? So it's simply by hearing. We simply hear and we accept. It's like this story when Narada Muni went to Vaikuntha. And he told one Brahma from the earth, I'm going to Vaikuntha. He said, how nice. He said, please tell me how long I will be here. When will I go back to Vaikuntha? So Narada said, okay, I'll do that. Then he spoke to another potter or cobbler, simple devotee. So he said, I'm on my way to see Narayan in Vaikuntha. He said, oh, how wonderful. He said, can you ask when I'll be going back? So he said, okay. Then he went down, the Lord got up, washed his feet, treated him, the Brahmanas come. The Lord shows all the proper culture as he's living like a king. So he's worshipping the Brahmins, offering everything they want. And so Narada's inquired, may you give me this answer? There's two devotees, and they're asking when I can when they will come back to me. He said, tell the cobbler at the end of this life he'll come back. He told the Brahmin after many births, not for, he won't come back for many births. He said, so Narada said, why is that? He's a Brahmin, he's supposed to be the best of men. Why is that? He said, tell them this story and you'll understand. Tell them when you see them, they'll ask, what was I doing? You tell them I was passing elephants. Or camels. Elephants. Through the eye of a needle. I was getting the elephants to go through and they were passing through the eye of a needle. And Narada, all right. So he told that. So when he went to see the Brahmana, and he said, I've come back from Vaikuntha, I've just seen Narayan. He said, oh, so you're so fortunate. Did you ask him? He said, yes. He said, actually, he said, what was the Lord doing? He said, what was the Lord doing? He said, he was making elephants walk through the eye of a needle. He said, come on. Believe that. An elephant through the eye of a needle. Come on, don't do it. I know you're very famous at making jokes, but so no, he was doing it. How can you expect me to believe that? So he said, anyway, when will I go back? He said, not for many births. So then he went to the cobbler, and the cobbler, he said, oh, it's so nice, you're back, you've seen Narayan, you're so fortunate. Tell me, what was Narayan doing? He said, he was making elephants walk through the eye of a needle. He said, oh, so wonderful. Way he acts is so terrific. Not surprising, you know, he can put one huge banyan tree in one tiny little seed. Nothing's impossible for him. The Lord is so wonderful. And did you ask him when I go back? He said, yes, end of this lifetime. So then Narada Muni understood that you can't use logic, it's just a question of faith and acceptance. Accept the Lord like that. That's the only way. Even then you can't understand, because it's actually a revelation. We don't have the ability to understand. It says the Lord is infinite and we are finite. So how can the infinite understand, encompass the infinite? Not possible. But if the Lord reveals, if the infinite chooses to reveal itself to the finite, then it's possible. So like that, that is the program. If the Lord chooses to reveal himself to us, only then we can understand him in full, as much as we can understand. Because the Lord's always also expanding, the qualities are expanding, pastimes are expanding. So even the Lord fully can't understand himself, because at every moment it's something new, there's something else is coming on, new features, which you may not know before. Maybe something brand new which never existed before. So the Lord is constantly creating. You can't imagine that. Something was not even existing, now it comes into existence. Probably there's colours you've never seen and sounds you've never heard. We can't imagine colours outside of the spectrum of the rainbow. We can't imagine there's another colour. Right? But then so there's colours you've never seen before. And sounds you've never heard before. So like that, the Lord is Ananda Bodhivardhan. Oh, for his pleasure, the creation is constantly expanding into new and different ways for his own enjoyment. And the area is unlimited, where it can expand to, there's no end. So this is a qualification for understanding the Lord, initially faith. So that faith, as we say, it goes on, the faith gets thicker and thicker and thicker, stronger and stronger and stronger. Until it becomes, the faith becomes conviction, the faith becomes realization. That realization is given. Yeah. Conviction is by you're following the process and you're seeing it works. You're seeing the results, actual tangible results. That's conviction. Or you may see it in somebody else. That's your conviction, the process, it is working. Then you obviously, if it's working, then your faith gets stronger. In the beginning, your faith may be a little weak, because that's all it is, it's just faith. You're just accepting someone else's opinion or version. We never saw Krishna. We don't know, did he speak this or not? We just got to take somebody's word for it. It's just faith that we accept him, that, you know, what he's saying is true. But after practicing, then that conviction comes and we actually see result. It's right. What it said would happen. What is written is actually happening. What I've heard is actually happening. This change is coming. So now we become convinced. And then we become fixed, become steady like that. So that faith develops right up to the stage of full-blown faith is love. Because you have so much faith, you're completely dependent on the Lord. You understand he's your actual maintainer. No one else is a maintainer. Then you can give yourself completely to the Lord. Because you understand, he is maintaining us. Not that he will be our maintainer, he's already maintaining everything. Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. As soon as Mahavishnu breathes in, it's all finished, half a breath. Everything goes back. Everything imaginable. And then he breathes out, he comes again. So, Chaito Chaitanana, Chaitanya Chaitanya. There's one supreme and all the others are dependent on him. There's many eternals. We are eternal, the Lord is eternal, but the Lord is the maintainer of all of the other eternals. So that's his position. So he's always maintaining us in any condition of life. He's maintaining everything and everyone and everything. So we're always under the control of the Lord. But it's our choice. If we're fortunate enough to understand, we have a choice. We can become controlled by Yogamaya, or we can become controlled by Mahamaya. We can surrender to Yogamaya, or we can surrender to Mahamaya. That is our good luck, that we've heard this thing, that now we have a choice. So this is actually free will. This is where your free will really comes in. Apart from that, really, there's no such thing as free will. Of course, at every moment you're making a conscious choice, so you can say that's free will. But your conscious choice is dictated by the molten nature, by your conditioning. So more or less there's no free choice. More or less like that. Because you're conditioned into thinking a certain way, acting in a certain way, and you know, you have that according to your karmas. You're bound to do that. You're bound to act like that. And everyone's going to act differently. So more or less, you don't really have much choice. But every moment you're making a choice. But that choice is conditioned. This is the argument. How can you say there's free will? Why did you choose to do something and not the other? Because of your programming, because of your conditioning. So if you're conditioned like that, how can you say there's free will? It's a very, very delicate subject matter to try to prove that you do have free will. But we don't understand. It's just like when you're on the aeroplane, you're going to go to one place. So on the aeroplane, you can choose tea or coffee. That's your free will. And you can move, you can get out up and down the aisle. But if you're on the highway, on the freeway, then you can go, you can't, in India it's different, you can do anything. But if you're the other countries, you can't get off the road. You've got to stay on that road until there's a proper turn off. You can't turn around, you can't stop, but you can go in a fast lane or you can go in a slow lane. That depends. But you're forced to go on. So like that, with karma, you're forced to travel on forward according to your desires and according to your previous punya and pap. You're going to experience some happiness and some distress on the way. So there's more or less nothing you can do about it. Because the argument is, why would you go in the fast lane or why would you go in the slow lane? Yeah? So there must be some motivation there. And that motivation is because of some conditioning before. Because you think you'll benefit. You think you'll benefit by going in the fast lane or you think you'll benefit by going in the slow lane. So that's your choice is actually conditioned by your previous karmas, previous ideas. So they say, how can it be free will? Because everything is conditioned like that. So more or less it is like that. Still, you can act. Do something really strange, funny. But what I said funny means when somebody does something which is completely unexpected. So sometimes people do something completely unexpected. Why would a person do that? You ask them why, I don't know why I did it, I just did it. So they have choose to do it, but it's not a normal thing to do. And if you do it too much, then they lock you up. But generally, no, we do have that choice, but generally we don't take the choice. I remember when I was come home from working, and I used to walk down the street, and I thought, why am I walking? I always cross the road at the same place every day. I walk on across here, and I go, why do I do the same thing? So, why am I going to go this way today? But I always end up going that way because it's probably the shortest route, obviously. And you see that by nature, man is a rational. What is it? We like, they like regulation. You see when the people come in the temple, if you notice every day, they generally sit in the same place. Right? You know what I'm saying? Right often, they sit exactly the same place every day when they come. They come and take their darshan and they play their basins in the same place. They sit in class, if there's not, they generally sit in the same place. So we like, actually, you humans, they like that regulation. Even animals should do that. Animals. One time there was Prabhupada was on a morning walk. Prabhupada suddenly stopped. Look, you see? There's bird stall all over the floor. And everyone was looking and they said, you see? And everyone was looking for some mystical pattern, you know, some mandala that had some meaning, right? They said, no, what, you see what that means? And he said, no, Prabhupada, we can't understand what it means. He said, it means that this bird is so attached. He's coming to the same place every day. He's sleeping there every day, the same place. So even the animals, they have their pattern, their conditional pattern. Because actually, by regulation, you will become peaceful. So that's what we want. Because why would you sit anywhere else? You know, it doesn't matter where you sit, but why? Then it doesn't matter if you sit in that place every day. So if you just sit in that same place every day, you don't have to think, where should I sit today? So it's actually simpler. But you find that, you go to Mangalati, everyone stands in the same place. If you're looking for someone, I know where he stands. You can go and find him, it's dark. And he always stands over this side. You notice? Anyway, we have, so there's so many reasons why the Lord appears, and why he does, and these are all right. Whatever she's saying, they're right, according to that person. They're all right. Because he does. He does all of these things when he appears. He does appear because Lord Brahma prayed. He does appear because there's the demons are coming out. He does appear to protect the devotees. He does appear to glorify the Yadu dynasty. And everything she says is true. So you can't say there's one thing. Yes, you can't understand why the Lord acts. Krishna Das Kavara says, if one says that you can understand the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't understand. Because the Lord thinks one thing and he does another. But in any case, one way he acts, he fulfills the desires of so many people. Everyone thinks. You see, when everyone's looking at the deities, Dasha, doing the thing, and suddenly a flower drops from right around his hand, and everyone says, she answered my desire. Because that's what it means, generally. If the flower falls, something happens on your day, it means what you're thinking, that'll be okay. We take it like that. But everyone's thinking, you see? They look round, you see? I was just thinking that. And everyone's thinking something completely different. They say, you see? We're blessed. Because it was for me. I was thinking, I was praying like this, and Radharani answered my prayer. So everyone's thinking the same. But actually, it may be true. Jesus. Same time. And that's why also that you get different descriptions of pastimes by different acharyas. So we shouldn't, when we hear there's one description, you read Chaitanya Charitamrita or you read Chaitanya Bhagavata or Chaitanya Mango, you read the same three stories and they're different. Because they're written by different people. And they're written from different angles. You know, this is how they saw the thing take place. That's what they saw. And the other one saw it take place like this, and that's what they heard, that's what they saw. They're all true, but they may be contradictory. But they're all actually true. And the Lord was having kirtan in front of Rathi Asha. He divided everyone up into seven groups, and he was dancing in every group. Everyone thought that Lord Chaitanya is dancing with us. And he was. They was all right. When Krishna is taking his lunch in the forest, all the boys sit round him and they take their picnic because there's so many boys and everyone's facing Krishna. Same with the gopis and the residents. So he's doing that simultaneously. He can be one person and many persons. He's facing one way, but everyone can see he's facing me. But you have to accept the fact that the Lord is inconceivable if you actually want to understand the Lord at all. You must accept that fact. He's completely inconceivable. And you simply accept what the acharyas are giving, because they're getting that's revelation from them. They're speaking from realization. So as long as the person is in the parampara is accepted as the acharya, then we accept that. So therefore also the acharyas can alter some of the details slightly. Srila Prabhupada did slightly alter. An acharya can do that. Acharya means someone who's empowered. Not that you can leave ISKCON and open a temple and found acharya and call Krishna Das Adhikari. You can do it. You can do it. He's a Vaishnava, he's a parampara. You can do it. But the acharya title won't carry much weight. Acharya means someone who's actually empowered by the Lord. Well, you can use the title, it's okay. But really it means like that. The acharya means what he said, he can actually make changes. So you and I, we could make changes. But we wouldn't carry that same potency. Because we're not actually empowered by the Lord to do that thing. We're empowered to follow the acharya. We're empowered to chant Hare Krishna, follow the acharya. So therefore we always follow the acharya. So even if there's some discretion amongst different acharyas, then we follow acharya. There's no problem there. According to time and circumstance. Just like Bhaktivinoda, according to his preaching, then he had to change some of the details. So he's saying Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're all his eternal servants, isn't it? And the process is bhakti, the nine processes of bhakti. So that's there. But other times he changed some principles, because for the time and circumstance and the audience that he was preaching to at that time in India, everyone was going British. And that was the rule. And you got all these, there was already in these mundane, you know, Western scholars, and that was the education was like that. So he was preaching to that class of people. So he made a few adjustments, so that they could identify with this philosophy in connection with theirs, for instance. It's like when Bhaktisiddhanta, there's a very nice lecture you may have read. He's talking to this one professor, Sathers or somebody. So he's very puffed up, this professor, and he comes on like, oh, you know, he's talking about your Hindu mythology and nothing compared with our Christian religion. And this is how he comes in, and you know, he's kind of laughing, and you know, it's a joke thing. You know, the people with elephant heads, and they fly on swans, and you know, all those kinds of things like that. Nine heads, parrot heads. So he began to. So Bhaktisiddhanta then began to speak, and he said, "Now, you're saying that how can your ideology hold up to ours?" And he said, "Oh, on the contrary, it's much greater than yours." Much greater. So it's actually yours is, he says, yours is actually taken up to, Christianity is taken up to Dasyaras. You're accepting the Supreme Lord as your father, your supplier, order supplier. And then he said, but beyond that, there's much more than that, that we don't have to accept the Lord as the supplier, father figure. Then we can have different relations with him. But this was the end. But in the interim, he was just explaining how he actually did it in very scholarly language. Also, he explained that about. He's talking about the different avatars. How could the Lord can come as a pig? And you know, he was joking with this. He said, no, this is perfectly fits. He said, because the first incarnation was. Here's the first incarnation of the Dasa avatars. Matsya. So no, Kurma. Matsya. Sorry. Yeah, Matsya. So he says, yes, it's a fish. Huh? So according to Darwin, we came from this aquatic. Then the next incarnation is Kurma. So it's half, it's amphibian, half in the water and half out. So this is the evolution, you see. It's coming out of the water, it's developed some legs, and now it's crawling around on the thing. And the next incarnation is? Huh? Varaha. Then it transforms into the animal. So this is then the next incarnation, huh? Nasimha, half animal, half man. This is the missing link. What they can't find, half man, half animal. See the evolution. Then, Brahman, dwarf, not fully man, dwarf. Then next incarnation, Parashuram, not uncivilized man. He's growing up, but he's still uncivil, a caveman. You see the axe and his bear skin or whatever, deer skin. And next? Ram, perfect man. Perfect man. Then Krishna comes and shows his nice pastime. So he was going like this. And he was and he was getting more and more submissive, more and at the end he was like this. It's such a nice conversation. He completely changed his personality. And I never realized the depth of your philosophy. I never realized Vaishnavism was like this at all. So I've learned so much from you. I'm very, very grateful to your holiness. And they could do that. So sometimes, you know, Bhaktivinoda also would, because they was all that way, then he would preach to them. Otherwise, some things they just couldn't understand, couldn't appreciate. It wasn't in their ideology. So sometimes you have to connect. Because if you're not a Christian, you're a heathen. You're going to hell. If you don't accept Christ, you're going to hell eternally. That's bus. There's no more discussion. So they're very dogmatic, you see, very fanatical, sentimental, all of everything rolled into one. So you have to somehow to penetrate and try and connect and say yes. Yes. So Bhaktivinoda was, that was the time, and then of course all the Vaishnavas have become Sahajiyas practically. So Vaishnavism had a very bad name. So Bhaktivinoda, this is his appearance state of it. And I think we're going to speak about that tonight, some of his things that he did. So he had to clean everything up. That was his mission, to clean up the image of Vaishnavas, but at the same time establish the supremacy over the, because everyone was, you know, the whole thing was British is best. So even the philosophy, so people were giving up their culture and following it like that. So a little change is needed according to time and circumstance. So, but the acharya can do that. A person who's in power can do that. Not that anyone can do, because anyone's doing everything anyway. Every district has its own guru, and, right? And every village has one, and every tree there's some pole. There's someone sitting there, and like that. In same thing. The philosophers are commonplace now, but. As long as we don't change the essential principle. So the Prabhupada said that you can classify them into two groups, those that accept Krishna as God and all the others. So if they say that Krishna is the Lord, or Narayan, or Ram, then we can accept them. If they say something else, then they belong to the other group. They're not willing to surrender to God. They're not telling people to surrender to God. So therefore, you can easily classify them. If they say you're God, or someone else is God, or I'm God, or then that's what their thing is, or everyone's God, or no one's God. That's what they're saying. But if they say that Krishna's God, or Ram's God, or Vishnu's God, then we can accept them. So that's how we discriminate like that, and we'll accept what the acharyas say in the beginning, simply on faith. And by doing this, this is the way the Lord has given. This is the way the Lord has given. If you want to go back to Him, there's a way to do it. There's a culture to follow. There's a certain methodology. There's a certain behavior that you have to follow if you want to actually qualify to go to the spiritual world. And if you can't follow that culture here, if you can't follow that behavior here, they're never going to let you in the spiritual world, because they all perfectly behave. They follow very nicely culture. They have a very nice authoritative system in the spiritual world. Huh? Everyone's serving Krishna, but each of those, the gopis that are very close to Krishna, they have their own groups of shakis, and they're all very obedient. And in turn, they have their own groups. And like this way, there's hundreds of millions of goddess is a fortune worshipping the Lord. But everyone is very submissive to their group leader. Everyone is submissive to authority. Because they know that this person is closer to Krishna than me. And I want Krishna's pleasure. They know how to give Krishna more pleasure than me. Let me assist them. And this way everyone is trying to push each other. And at the same time, the ones that are great, they like to also to get the other devotees close to Krishna, some direct service also. So that there's a competition. So this is Alma, we're supposed to feel him like das, das, and das, with the servant of the servant of the servant. But we understand when we hear the acharyas what affection they have for Krishna, by the way they speak, by the way they write, by the way they act, by the way they live from their lives. We can understand they have real affection for Krishna. So let's serve them. And they're telling us how to behave if we want to come like that. This is a path they took. How did they become like that? Because they followed some authority. They followed the parampara. So that our chastity to the guru is the essential principle in spiritual life. The secret is to understand the mood of the guru. That's the most important thing. Understand the mood of the guru and try to follow his instructions in that, in the same mood. because it's the pleasure of the Guru, it's the pleasure of the Vaishnava that is going to be our success. And they're watching carefully, not what we say. No, it's not only what you know. Prachanacha must be there. So they're watching for that behavior. So if you can't behave here, how are you going to go to the spiritual world? If you're not faithful to your Guru here, how are you going to be faithful to your leader in the spiritual world? Never accept you. You'll never go back to God in this life. Not to Golok. You may go somewhere else. This guy has gone to some other Gaudiya, Vaishnava, because he's offering Prama Bhakti, Siddha Deha, offering these things. They won't go to Golok this lifetime. Because they left their leader. They're just opportunists. They've left their group leader. They've left his instructions. His instructions are very clear. So you can't change camps. If you change camps here, well then they also have camps in the spiritual world. So then at least you don't get to Golok. If they go there, they don't go to there's an inner Golok and an outer Golok. So that's a little esoterical. But anyway, they may go if they're really fortunate, but they don't get the chance of an outline of Rupa Goswami, which means Lalita Vishaka Dham and the Manjaris that serve them, Rupa Manjari. Come on, Manjari. They may get somewhere else. Different expansions of Krishna, doing different things in different areas. So that is the essence. We should be faithful to the Guru, and not be misled by others. We take shiksha. If you advance as much as your Guru, which is highly unlikely, but it's possible, and history has shown, not that your Guru is only on Madhyam, he can't give you Prama Bhakti. You must take initiation from this devotee who is a Prama Bhakti, otherwise how can you get Prama Bhakti? Prabhupada says. So if you think it's a little it's not very, but you may, you know, because we're neophyte, we're not very intelligent, we may think, oh my Guru, actually it's true, he can't give me, he can only take me up to his level, he's on Madhyam. But he's also advancing. That means you're going to advance and he's not going to advance, in other words. No, he's also advancing. As you're advancing, he's also advancing. But even if you do manage to catch up with him, which you shouldn't even think like this, my Guru is my Savior, he's taking me back to Godhead. It's very presumptuous, it means you're puffed up. It means that I'm going to reach the level of my Guru. Then what's going to happen to me? He can only take me up. No. Even if you do that, then that's wonderful. Actually, that's wonderful. Even if you come to the same level as your Guru, then the Guru is so happy. You're an ideal disciple. That's fantastic. He's so pleased. Then he's like, now you take shiksha from this devotee. I've taught you as much as I know, your first class. You've learned so quickly. Now you take shiksha from this devotee. Take instruction from this devotee. That's the etiquette. There's no rasa basa, there's nothing incompatible, it's very nice. But not that you reject my Guru because he's on this platform and go to this one. Or my Guru has a big house and the sannyasi doesn't have a house, so I should reject him and take initiation from someone else. Why does sannyasis wear in shoes? Never mind they have to travel around all these hellish cities. Why do they wear shoes? Sannyasi shouldn't wear shoes, he's not proper, so I reject him. So anything, all these crazy things come into mind. So nowadays these things happen. No, but be chaste to the Guru. As long as the Guru is in parampara, then you have nothing to worry about. And he will, yeah, and then if you do come to that position, then he will recommend you to shiksha. You can take shiksha from someone else. Or if you want to take shiksha from someone else, then you go to the Guru. I'm very attracted to this person's teachings, the way I'm getting a lot of enlightenment from him. Can I take shiksha? Yeah, you go there. This is the etiquette. You go there, then you go back, you come back to Guru and tell him what you've heard. Is that right, Guru? He'll say yes, or he'll say whatever he says. Right now. So if you want to go somewhere else, then you generally you take permission, go there, take 6 weeks, come back and tell him what you've heard and learned, and is that right? Can I continue like this? Because you're supposed to be in the same mood as your guru. So you don't want to hear something which is in a different mood. He may be in a different bhava. So like that. So you have to be very cautious in these areas. But as long as you're faithful to the guru, then he's there for our benefit. He's there to guide us. He's there to deliver us. That's why he's come. It's not a competition. I've got to get more disciples. He's there to deliver us in any way he can. So if he sees we can benefit by someone, then obviously he'll say, please do that. But the etiquette is to report back to see that you're going in the proper, completely on track. So also there's many reasons why the devotees appear, as well as the Lord. They serve many purposes also. They come for me, they come for you, and they come for... Yes. Anyway. Okay, sorry. You're not so late. Swam Bhagavatam ki jay, Prabhupad ki jay, Sai Gopramandi. If they're junior to you, you should try to help them. If they're senior, there's not much you can do. You can't, not your position to preach to them. You can ask them in all submissiveness why, but maybe you shouldn't, because then they'll give their reason. It may influence you. Huh? Then you can say, why are you doing this? Why is not? You have to say from Shastra. What is it? How come you're doing this? You can't reject Guru if the Guru is in good standing. You can only reject Guru on two points. The Guru goes into sense gratification and stays that way. But you give him there's a long period of time you wait that you understand that he's not interested in coming back. That time you can accept another. Or if he goes off track spiritually and becomes Mayavad, something like that, then those two instances you can actually reject the Guru. If you please, there's no hope for them coming back. You pray to Krishna and you try somehow other. But if you see there's no hope, then those but otherwise there's no injunction for rejection. How can you reject Guru if they're not doing those things? Just come up with some crazy excuse. So, if he's your superior, then it's going to be difficult because he'll know the philosophy better than you. You won't be able to. But you can ask him for your own clarification in all humility. You can go, oh, why? I just can't understand why you've done this. What is wrong? What is wrong with your guru and parampara? Of course, then you may have to hear some blasphemy. That's a problem. Because he's got to justify himself why he's leaving. He's got to justify, yeah? So, then you have so many reasons. And you don't want to hear those kind of things. But he's not saying, the Guru's never said, don't chant Hare Krishna. He's not said, don't take offer your prasadam. He's not saying Krishna's not God. Watch out. Then externally, it's an offense to judge a Vaishnava according to his previous condition. And if he drives a car and uses a computer and wears shoes, what do you expect in Kali Yuga? You want to preach to people, you've got to use modern methods. Otherwise you sit under a tree. his ideal, oh, he's a Babaji, he's not engaged in fountains and pens and very nice, very nice. Of course he's very nice. No responsibility. Just sitting there chanting Hare Krishna, doing Bhagavad. Of course he's very nice. But fact is, if you're already initiated, then you can't reject Guru. You can't. There's only one Diksha Guru. So how do you expect to go back? If you're not chased here, how are they going to accept you there? And that person should never initiate you anyway. If he's so advanced, he'll know this, he knows the culture. You can't do that. You can't reject your Guru. You have a Guru. You can't take Shiksha, I'll give you Shiksha. I can't give you initiation. Go away and initiate. What's wrong with the Guru? He's not fallen. He should say that. Even if we're foolish, we may be in the fight and don't have proper understanding, but he should have understanding. So why would he do that? But in Kali Yuga, these things happen. But the biggest argument is, I lost faith in my Guru. So in that case, if you lost faith in your Guru, you might as well get initiated by someone else. Might as well. Because the whole relationship is built on faith. That's the whole relationship. So if you don't have any faith, then what's the use? How are you going to make advancement? So in that case, you can justify and say, well, I have no faith. And then the Guru say, well, if he has no faith, then what's the use of it? Then you can initiate again. Just save him. The argument is there. I don't know how to overcome that one. But the reason for losing faith is very weak, you see, it's very near by understanding. Simply because someone built him a house, and the sannyasi shouldn't have a house, therefore he's not bona fide. Anyway, you become fixed yourself, you become that Guru Nishtha, and avoid these people as far as possible. But you associate with those faithful people. Many will come, many will go. Prabhupada said many. He said, don't be surprised who stays. Don't be surprised who goes, be surprised who stays. In fact, most people go. Not easy. The line is not easy, it's a tightrope. Maya is there all the time. You've got to be cautious. The tightrope walker, when he's walking the tightrope, he has to put one foot there and one foot there, directly in front. Not one inch that way, not one inch that way. Otherwise he's doomed. Right? And when he's walking along, what does he look at? He's looking straight ahead at where he's going to reach. He doesn't look either side, he doesn't look down, otherwise he's going to lose his balance. He looks straight ahead and he knows what to do with that foot, like that, like that, like that. There's a spiritual life is like that. You're fixed on the goal, where you're supposed to be going, and you tread very, very carefully. That means parampara. You tread exactly where you're supposed to tread. Not this side or that side. Razor's edge, Prabhupada said. Razor's edge. One slight deviation, you can cut yourself. It's like that. Not easy. Especially in Kali Yuga. And Kali is expert at causing disruption, because Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel, age of disagreement. So he's expert now, and he goes for the big men now. He doesn't go for the small guys anymore. He doesn't go for the me and you. He goes for the big ones. So I get the big one, and you've got 200 automatically, 300, 400, 500 devotees automatically, completely bewildered. And then you can easily pick them up, or the other agents can take them away, you know, in their confusion. He's expert. So this is going on. So you can see it as Krishna's test, or you can see it as Kali's hard work and endeavor, and whatever. But it's not an easy thing to continue like this. It takes determination, it takes patience, tolerance. All those qualities have to be there. Because you're going to be, and it's all a test by material energy. How much you really want Krishna. How much you really want. So even in spiritual life, there's so many deviations. Even you accept the spiritual path, even amongst the spiritualists, there's so many deviations and quarrelings going on, even amongst own family. says, oh, it's difficult, it's very difficult in Kali Yuga, everything is bad. But in spite of all that, you've just got to keep on going. That's faith. Faith until there's taste. Then that taste will carry. So we need good association for that. Faithful. And expect all the, and there's so many other things going to come when the present issues are over, new issues will come up. When they've gone, something else will come up. There's always, Kali's expert. He'll always be bringing new things in. Don't think it won't be, it's, one day it's going to be all lovely and nice and no more problems. And it'll never be like that. Material world is not meant to be like that. So you may, it's your spiritual life. You know, my guru is going to send me back to Godhead. I know that. And I just follow. Because he's not saying anything different than what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada is exemplifying the previous acharyas from Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is directly instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Goswamis. We see that what my guru said is no contradiction to what Rupa Goswami is saying. Therefore, I have full faith, he'll take me back to Godhead. So why should I let these other things influence me? You want that conviction. And you get that by associating with devotees who are fixed. It'll come anyway. But we try to take that association speeds things up. We get a lot of benefit. Otherwise we try to avoid them. Unless they're innocent. Because they also try to get other people for their own to substantiate their move, then they'll give you the philosophy and they'll say, well, he's doing it. And also they'll tell other people to come over. And so they'll try and weaken the faith. This is the modus operandi. They tell you reasons why you know, what is wrong. They just point out all the defects, which you shouldn't be doing, which you shouldn't be seeing in Vaishnavas. Because they're, defects are there, but they're going to be gone. Why follow the process, those defects will go. It's just the behavioral defects, they're not philosophical defects, just due to conditional life. So they're going to go as you practice devotional service. So therefore, it's an apparatus to consider these things, to see these things in a Vaishnava. But they'll point out tiny little things, just that, no, he's doing this, he shouldn't be doing this, not culture, not Vedic, whatever they'll say. So, but all these things are simply to justify them moving away. Simply to justify themselves. And if everyone does it, then it's justification. See, I must be right, everyone's doing it. So they purposely target young people, innocent people, to bring them over to their way of thinking. And then it's justified, you see, everyone's doing it, must be right. So if they're like that, then if they're innocent, you can preach. If not, it's best to avoid them. What have you got to say? They know the philosophy. Why do you want to hear their reasons? Because the reason is going to be a negative thing, that's all. They've left for some negative reason. They've seen something and they've made this is negative. So why do you want to hear that? It's not conducive for our spiritual life. So best avoid them altogether. Carry on preaching. And Prabhupada said also, there have been many splinter groups come from ISKCON. So we're seeing the starting. It's almost taking shape. In fact, they've registered a society of Ritviks in New York. So maybe the first splinter. But Prabhupada said there are many splinter groups coming. He said, but ISKCON will always be the standard. Right. And then Prabhupada could criticize Prabhupada. What Prabhupada would criticize Prabhupada? If they criticize Prabhupada, they don't get any support from ISKCON devotees, ISKCON devotees. They go in glorifying Prabhupada. Then the devotees say, what's wrong? He's glorifying Prabhupada. Why are you saying he shouldn't go to his temple? Why you shouldn't sing? They come in glorifying Prabhupada. And actually Prabhupada's glorifying them. Actually, Prabhupada's, because they're actually great souls. So Prabhupada, by Prabhupada's mercy, now all these people, which would be just stuck in Bengal and Orissa and like this, now they're going all around the world. So, by Prabhupada's mercy. As one of them said, I'm simply going, following Swamiji's footsteps, leading the remnants of his prasadam. Because the whole route is ISKCON. They go around ISKCON. But they never criticize Prabhupada. They'll be finished. They criticize everything. They criticize because we build a gate in our temple. Now they've all got gates. They criticize us for building a guest house and making a park. Why? We just attract materialistic people. Who else is it? They've all got guest houses. Now they're building guest houses and gates. 20 years down the line. No. Yeah, because they say this is successful. We're preaching. We're attracting conditioned souls and making them into devotees. So now they all built good big gates. Everyone's got a better gate than this one now, in my book. When they first built that, they criticized. Why are you building this big gate? Our thing is Hari Nam. Shant Hare Krishna. Why do you have to do these things? Why are you building these? Now they're all building, all got nice gates and they're all building guest houses. 20 years behind Prabhupada. They're 20 years behind Prabhupada in their preaching strategy, thinking. And they're only famous internationally because of Prabhupada's disciples and ISKCON. And they go to we have no objection to them going there preaching. Why they go to that country? There's one temple in that country. They go to that city. They go to that area. They go to that block. They go to the same street. They go to the other side of the road. One temple, one group open a temple right on the opposite side of the road. And on the Sunday feast, they stand in the middle of the road and say, we're having a program here today. They're targeted in ISKCON devotees. There's millions and millions of conditioned souls out there. Millions. Why are they coming and targeted? They're coming to our temples and trying to undermine the faith of devotees and taking them away. What are they doing? Well, of course they know the philosophy. They're great. They could do it, but it's just easier like this. You know, you got someone who's already. We've been nurturing them, and we're trying to bring them up to the state of 16 rounds and follow the principles. And it's difficult. And they go in and they initiate immediately, same day. You want initiation? Come. We give everyone initiation. 4 rounds. Sometimes they don't even say that. So they say, why are you doing that? Well, this is just to give them. If you don't give them that, then we say, why are you initiating people who are still taking intoxication? They're not following principles. Well, if you do that, then they'll get determination, they'll become encouraged, and then they'll give it up. So that's their mercy, you see. But why target our congregation? We're trying to bring them up to a higher standard. There's millions of people out there, millions. And they say, so the congregation would say, what's the difference in philosophy? Nothing. They're the same family. So what's the difference? Why can't they get initiated there? He's your Guru Vada. Right? He's a great soul, you can see he's a great soul. Nothing he doesn't know about Krishna, Leela. Nothing he doesn't know about the philosophy. He's read all of the books. Nothing he doesn't know. He's a very wonderful person, you can see. You feel. Why shouldn't he? And he's not and if you get initiated, there's no rules and regulations. You don't have to chant 16 rounds. There's no pressure to do service or anything like that. You just contribute to the temple. Okay. No, who wouldn't take that? Same family, same goal, same philosophy, but there's no pressure there. Easy. And so he, so they, all these faith people are there, so it's very easy to snap them up like that. Anyway, this is politics. I don't know where they go. They won't go to the, they won't go to Golok this lifetime. How can they? They're not faithful here. This is a training ground. You're supposed to develop a nice affection for Krishna here. That's the qualification for going back. And you do that through his devotees. It's the devotees that are recommending you. So if you're not chased here, and to your group leader here, how are they going to set you back there? Everyone is chased there. Take.
When anyone takes somebody else's child, they take the permission of a spiritual
master.
But then they also can give the understanding that all brothers of the spiritual master are given the same respect as the spiritual master. So it is not automatically that all of us who are the brothers of the spiritual master become a shiksha guru and we extend shiksha from them. Yes. Do we have to take permission?
There is a form, I don't know what the formal thing is. Someone asked me, can you be my shikshu? I said, yes. She said, can I say that I'm your, because her spiritual master left. She didn't like, she said, if anyone asks me, who's my spiritual master, can I say that you're my shikshu guru? I said, yes. But actually, there's a thing, I don't know what it is. There's an official thing in ISKCON. Does anyone know what it is? I don't know what it is. But like that, anyone you take instruction from is actually shikshu guru. And we say that anyone in ISKCON is okay to do like that, take instruction from them. Of course we don't, because everyone, we're preaching the same, we're all in Prabhupada's family, we're preaching exactly what Prabhupada said. But it more or less means outside of, if it's outside of Prabhupada's family. Because it's a different mood. Prabhupada's a different mood than his godbrothers. The goal is the same, the plot is the same, but the mood is different. They're more in bhajan and we're into preaching. But there is an official shiksha guru thing. I'll have to read the ISKCON law books. I don't know what it is myself. Anyone who gives you instruction is a shiksha guru. You can take lesson from the crow and the dog. Anyone who gives you can accept, you can say like that, shiksha guru. And that's no problem. Then, of course, in ISKCON you don't have to do that. You don't have to go to, ask someone a question, you don't have to go to your guru if I can ask him a question and then go and tell him. Not like that, in ISKCON. That's not necessary. Because it's understood, we're all preaching Prabhupada. Anyone we learn from, you know. So you see your shiksha guru as the same as, it's not different from the guru. So, but the difference is mainly between this, the diksha guru, that you chose him, so obviously you have more respect for him. But someone else may come along later on that you never saw before. Just like some people initiated in Russia and they never saw any other guru. And now they saw another guru, they want to change their gurus, because actually, if I saw him before, I would have chosen him. But we'd only saw one guru. For 10 years, only one guru came here. In Kali Yuga, things are different. But in any case, you can do the shiksha. You see this, so shiksha and the diksha are not different. They're both doing the same thing. Actually, shiksha you're going back on. It's instruction. The diksha is connecting you. The diksha is putting you on the road, in other words. Diksha guru takes you. You push on, okay, there it is. But how you go back is on shiksha, instruction, by following that. So in that sense, there's no difference. But obviously you're going to give, your diksha guru has a special place. He's the one that You know. And the Diksha is more on the cultural aspect. The Diksha Guru is supposed to train you in Achan, in behavior. Whereas the Shiksha Guru is more philosophical. He gives you the, you know, philosophical understanding of the process. The Diksha, he will give you the practical application much more. The Diksha Guru, that's his business, to train you in Pancharatika and things like that. He gives you that he's supposed to train you in deity worship or whatever. Of course, it's a little difficult if you've got, if you're not many gurus and lots of disciples. But that's it. The emphasis is more on the cultural in the beginning of the Diksha Guru is also given Shiksha. So, there's a proposition, I'm your Diksha and your Shiksha Guru. So, the Diksha Guru is one. We don't change. And essentially there's no difference because they're both saying the same thing. But one is accentuating the culture rather than the philosophical side of it. And he's taking care of you. He's going to take you back to Godhead, your Diksha Guru. So he has a special care, you know. If you're going off, he'll have to advise you. Whether the Shiksha Guru won't, he won't tell you how to. Sorry. He'll tell you how to advance to Krishna. He may not be interested in that of it, but the Diksha Guru will be more interested there because he has a special relationship. But he's going to deliver you. He's actually going to pull you out, get you out of Maya, and deliver you back to Godhead. That's his promise if you follow. Whereas that commitment is not there with Shiksha Guru. Yeah, if you're interested, he's giving you Shiksha to go back, but if you want to go this way or that way, he's not so interested. Whereas the Diksha Guru, he will be interested. He'll go back and try and pull you out. But essentially there's no difference, because they're both doing the same thing, trying to help us become Krishna conscious.
There's
a book written on Shiva. What? There's a book written on Shiva.
I
think
it's a very good book.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's an old book, quite old book. Yeah, very nice book. Shiva Maharaj. He's very astute, Shiva Maharaj, very sober. Very learned. Ideal sannyasi. He's writing books on. He wrote books of Krishna and Vrindavan. Summaries of the 10th cantos. Parihaṁ, the song of the flute, I cannot repay you. Taking all of the tickets from the previous acharyas and comparing them to the Prabhupada's and presenting like that. But he says, I'm so amazed by reading all these other acharyas' tickets at Prabhupada's genius or his Prabhupada's ability, Prabhupada's spiritual ability. To say what all the other acharyas are saying in very, very simple language. Taking the essence of what all the acharyas are saying and put it in very simple language. That's acharya. So just as the more I study the other acharyas, what they're saying, and Prabhupada's also, he's just reading from the other acharyas and transcribing it again. But in an easier, more palatable way according to the time, age, and the audience. So it continues to, you know, the more I read them, the more Prabhupada becomes glorious. How he's taken the essence, very essence of what they're saying and put it in such simple language, sweet language, the very essence. So he's writing on very esoteric subjects, because he says in the beginning, I think there's a need for this kind of thing, because everyone's going somewhere else looking else for this. They want to hear these things, topics of Krishna. So these other gurus, they're only speaking. Krishna Tattva. They're not telling you to follow the four regular principles. They say that's Prabhupada's job. Prabhupada brought you up from animal life, made you into human beings. Now I've come to take you the rest of the way. So I can give you Siddha Deha, I can give you Bhava Bhakti, I can give you Prama Bhakti. But we see amongst the disciples, who's got it? This is my question. If he's given it, who's got it? I didn't say anyone, who's got it? He's never got it. And his godbrothers, not his godbrothers, his peers. That means God, Prabhupada's godbrothers are saying, if he's given it, where did he get it from? Because he didn't get it from his guru. And his guru told him not to do it, actually. And he didn't get it from Bhaktisiddhanta. Where did he get it from? And from the Prabhupada's in Vrindavan. But that's not our line. It's not our line. It's a bona fide, it may be a bona fide process, but we have to follow the acharyas. Bhaktisiddhanta was against it, because it's so easy to become sahajya. Prabhupada was adamantly against it. Any sniff of that, Prabhupada was furious, and he would talk on it for days and days. He would lecture on that point, days and days. He said, this thing can ruin ISKCON. Finish on a sweet note. Can we finish on a sweeter note? Someone else? What?
Regarding the free will, you said the free will we have is actually not free will, because material modes is directing us to acting the things. But what about in the spiritual world when we decided to
No, it's the same free will now. But now your free will is conditioned by the modes of nature.
But there it's not conditioned because.
No, but it's conditioned by the spiritual nature, yoga mind. You're never independent. Now you have free will here, but why wouldn't you do something? You know, what's in your heart and in your mind. And that is influenced by the impressions of your karmas. It tells you this is good and this is bad. Why would you reject what's good or do something that was bad? It doesn't make sense. You wouldn't do it. But you can do it. It's your free will. But according to your conditional nature, you'll say, I'll do that and I won't do that. Whereas a pig is going to say, I'll do the opposite. Or someone else may do the opposite, according to their nature. Because that thing is happy for them, that brings thing pleasure and that brings pain, and it's vice versa for you. It's the same thing. But one's experiencing it as pleasure, one is experiencing it as not pleasure. So what is guiding one to take it away? Say conditional nature. It's only your conditional nature. So why would you choose one and not the other? It's just according to your perception of that, your conditional nature. It's the same, but the same thing is giving pleasure to someone else. But you think it won't give pleasure to you. Someone else thinks it's nice. You don't think it's nice, but someone else thinks it's nice. It's the same thing. That object hasn't changed. It's simply due to your karma and how you're affected by the modes of nature. But you can say no. You can say no, I'll take that one. But why would you? Why would you? No, you have free will. You have free will. You can say no, but why would you? Doesn't make sense. The free will is always there. But it's more or less conditioned. Why would you use your free will and do something you don't want to do? And why do you want to do something? Because it's happiness there. And why do you think it's happiness? Because it's the way you're conditioned. You like this and you don't like that. That's all. So within that, you can say it's free will, but not much free will.
This holds good in the spiritual world as well. The free will we have, it's again conditioned by yoga mind
also. Yeah. Yeah, internal. See, the condition is there that you want to please Krishna. So you have free will how to please Krishna. So you can think of new ways, new ideas and like this. How to please. But if you wonder what it's like to be Krishna, then this doesn't fit there. Jai Shri Gaurakam ki jai Shri Gopal ki jai Dai Gopalam ki jai.